comes back and the first quail calls. Follow the drinking gourd. For the old man is waiting for to carry the
longer recovery trip. I wasn't on last Sunday, as you all know, but because of that, I suppose I have 17 extra minutes today. But the great joy of it is you've got 17 extra minutes with my first guest, Jennifer Mlynarczyk. Is that good enough? Say it, Jennifer. Jessica, say it.
Jessica Mlynarczyk, yes.
It's a Croatian name. She is the author of Secret Chicago, A Guide to the Weird, Wonderful, and Obscure, and she will be on all the way until 9:40, so that should sell some books. You're originally from Ohio, yes?
Correct. I'm from Cleveland.
And you came here roughly 10 years ago?
Yeah, it'll be 10 years this year.
Why did you come here?
Well, it was...
Chicago's the greatest town in the world, and I wanted to see all the secrets it had.
It was the recession, and I lost my job, and I was always coming to Chicago. I had a lot of friends here visiting. And, you know, it's very similar to Cleveland. It's a bigger version.
Without a Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Without a Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. But we've got similar terrible winters and sports woes. So I always felt comfortable coming here, and I just took the plunge.
Did you get a job here right away, or did you have to look for a job?
I had to look, yeah. I was, you know, walking some dogs and doing random things for a few months, but I eventually ended up somewhere.
And you wound up in a marketing job. That's
correct.
Basically your career.
Yes.
So how does this book come to be?
Well, when I moved here, I was just so excited to be in a new city.
And explore.
Explore and energized and curious about everything. And, for example, I would go jogging down Clark Street and see a building with an Egyptian facade.
Think, sure.
How did that get there?
Ruby storage.
Yeah. Ruby storage. But I didn't know what that was. I was new. So I started blogging on, I started a blog called Urban Explorer, just for myself, just to have fun researching these funny things.
Without some letters, it's urbnexplorer.com. You started that, why?
Just to have fun seeking out new places in a new city and explore the history behind them and kind of nerd out just for myself, really. I wasn't expecting any audience.
Don't you find, in one of the things, the joys that I found in Secret Chicago, A Guide to the Weird, Wonderful, and Obscure, that there are a lot of people, even in this town, lifelong Chicagoans, who might indeed jog down Clark Street and might indeed see these kind of Egyptian motif on the outside of a building and just not pay any attention to it? That has always flabbergasted me about you weren't like that in Cleveland. What is it that spurred your curiosity? Because a lot of people don't express their curiosity.
You know, I think it was growing up, my family went on road trips all over Ohio and the Midwest. And, you know, they weren't extravagant vacations, but we would go to, like, Indian burial mounds and weird little museums all over the place. So I guess
Did they have an interest in history, or what did your parents do?
They don't have a background.
Yeah, sure.
Formally.
Sure.
But they've always been very interested in history. So,
yeah. And yeah. So they fostered that in you and your brothers and sisters.
Yeah. So when I had the chance to check out all of these places in a new city and see it with fresh eyes, I think that's what it takes sometimes, is that outside perspective to really raise
notion.
The question of what is this and why
so
is it here?
You start this blog, Urban Explorer, urbnexplorer.com, and what did you find in doing that? That people were, would you post little things like, hey, I saw this Egyptian motif on the outside of a building?
I did, and I was surprised when anybody told me that they read it and flattered. It was kind of like people would say, oh, you go out and you do all these things, and my message was, well, anyone
can do that.
Yeah, it's all this stuff is accessible to anyone. And then I started writing for other publications around town. I wrote for Chicagoist for many years before.
Oh, I love Chicagoist.
That was killed.
Yeah. What did you write for Chicagoist?
For Chicagoist, I did a lot of music and
reviews,
kind of culture things. Yeah. Yes.
With the notion of you're working in marketing, you're working for a big firm in marketing, or you don't have to say exactly where you work, but what were you doing in the marketing field?
Oh, sure. I work for DMC, which is an engineering consulting firm, and they specialize in a lot of industrial automation and controls. So I'm their marketing manager, and they were pretty small when I joined, although they've been around since 96, but they've had a lot of growth in the last few years and have opened offices.
But you seem to have had certainly an interest in, but maybe even an aspiration to right beyond the confines of the engineering firm.
Yes. I've learned a lot and done a lot of technical writing there, but outside of work is when I would follow all of these threads.
So when people would write into your blog, Urban Explorer, without the, it's urbnexplorer.com, what were you posting on there?
I mean, I would just look up, cool old bookstores or architecture, different street festivals in the city, just getting out and about to different neighborhoods.
Well, now, were you single then? You now have this nice guy who's your fiancé who's an engineer, so I'm assuming you
yes.
might have met him
different
at,
firm.
At work. Oh, a different firm. Yes. Really, really. Romeo and Juliet. Did you, obviously, you connected through the blog with a lot of Chicagoans.
I did. It was a good platform for that. And also just going to these different events and these places around town. And I was single and I was doing it alone most of the time. He was doing similar thing in Washington, D.C. where he was. So now we've got some company.
Were you ever, let me ask you about the nature of this town. And this book does take you, ladies and gentlemen, all over the town. Were you at any point as a single woman in this place fearful?
Yes. Getting out and about by myself, there are certainly places that you've got your guard up all the time, but more than others.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I was young and, invincible, and I just wanted to see
it. Young and naive, and I'll go anywhere.
Exactly.
I'll do anything.
Yes.
When did you start to fall in love? I mean, obviously, you had some affection for Chicago mm-hmm. before you came out here and before mm-hmm. you started writing about it. But were there any specific things that started to really foster your love? And it's hard mm-hmm. not to, I know Cleveland's got a lake, but this is a much different kind of lake scene here. That would do it for some people. The river does it for some mm-hmm. people. The architecture does it for some people.
I'd say maybe it's the architecture. I just, looking at some of these old buildings sometimes, I just try to imagine, what did that street look like during the 30s? What did it look like in the 1890s? And there's this sense that there are so many layers to Chicago's story, and some of them are right below the surface, and they're accessible, and not that hard to peel back if you look.
Did you start doing some of the, or writing some of the foundation, obviously, for your fine book, Secret Chicago Guide to the Weird, Wonderful, and Obscure, is a result, the foundation obviously comes from Urban Explorer. You must have started doing that and indeed becoming a kind of urban explorer of the Chicago scene, yeah?
It did, yes. So I would say there are places in this book from throughout my Chicago journey. Many of them, of course, I learned while I was researching this book.
Sure.
But some of them are from my earlier years of exploring. So things like Reby Storage, which probably a lot of Chicagoans know.
No, you're wrong. I mean, I write about some of this stuff all the time. And the one thing that does amaze me is that it does sometimes take the outside eyes to realize, wow, what is it? Or to even, it's one thing to see it, but it's another interesting thing that takes a little, not intellectual energy, but a little energy of some sort to say, I wonder what that is. It is obviously 1,000 times easier in this internet age to do that, but I think you still have to do it.
Even a place like the Green Mill, which is so iconic in Chicago, I asked a lot of people before I put that in. I thought, is this going to be, I'm trying to feature places that are a little less known, and
which you have many, and that's one of the things I'm going to ask you. We have so much time today on the show. Is why include? Yeah, that's a great. I'm glad you brought that up because I say to myself, if someone is thumbing through the index, which lists something not in the neighborhood of, but exactly, 200 some 198 two places. Why the Green Mill? Because people would say, the Green Mill. I know. Mm-hmm. What the Green Mill is. Why the Green Mill, then?
I asked a lot of people before I included it, and they did not No, about the Green Mill.
They just thought it was a nightclub.
Right. And so there are some places in here, you know, lifelong Chicagoans are going to recognize.
Of course.
My hope is there are others that will surprise them. But even if you know about jazz or live music at the Green Mill, you might not know about the Uptown Poetry Slam that was generated there.
Mark Smith.
Still continues.
Mark Smith,
correct.
Mark
yeah.
Smith. Going on as we speak. Going on as
Sunday night.
Or coming to the end as we speak. So that must have been, you know, you've got the Gold Pyramid House. One I really adore is number 80, The Last Pioneer, because Cap Streeter was indeed one of the strangest human beings. You can look at all the aldermen we have and all the mayoral candidates and say, Jesus Christ, these are some strange, strange people. Cap Streeter is arguably the strangest person in the history of Chicago.
He's my favorite Chicagoan. I'm
is
glad
that
you
right?
brought that.
Is
yes.
that right? he's a character. Talk a little about Cap and his wonderful, beautiful, lovely battle axe of a wife named Ma Streeter.
Well, he was out on the lake one day and his ship washed ashore, present day Streeterville, on a sandbar, and he just invited some people to start dumping trash there.
And also to party and drink there,
yes.
too. And to, hey, here's a gun, the police are coming, and fight off the police.
Yeah. Yes, he claimed that the district of Lake Michigan, as he called it, was not subject to Illinois or U.S. law because it was east of, you know, the
Chicago,
the land
yeah.
line. And this went on for 30 years. Of course, the lakefront neighbors, including people like Potter Palmer, all the elites, were not so happy about this rowdy bunch drinking nearby and, you know, squatting on the land. But reading the old press clippings about the shenanigans that he got into, it's like slapstick. It's so funny. I mean, his wife threw boiling water out the window on some cops.
Yeah.
They were shooting the cops in the behind with pellets.
Yes, you could say that the Streeters were sort of adversarial in their relationship
yes.
with the city fathers. But again, that's a great example, and I'm so glad he's in the book, or it's in the book, in that people, well, okay, there's Streeterville, and no one ever, no one has even asked me, like, what is Streeterville?
And so the thing in the book is a statue of him.
Yeah.
Which I think is in front of a diner.
It's not far from right. It's not far from here. It's at Grand and, I'm going to get it for you. Corner of McClurg and Grand, a couple blocks from this very studio.
And it's a, you know, a statue of an old man, top hat, and he's holding a little dog. He looks totally innocent.
He does.
But if you didn't know who he was and what he did, you would just think he's an innocent old man.
You know, I also, one of the things is, I like the sculpture, too.
I
mean, it's not a bad piece of art. There are some bad pieces of art in this town. One of the other things in this town that you certainly discovered, which you could not, would people have written many books about it, are the outdoor sculptures in Chicago form what I think is one of the great outdoor galleries in this country. It's an astonishing way to sort of see and explore the city. Where did you live when you first came to Chicago? What neighborhood?
When I first moved here, I was in Lincoln Park by DePaul, and I've been in Wicker Park for 7 years now.
Okay. Mm-hmm. You have explored the entire city. What other neighborhoods really intrigue you before we get down to these specifics?
Oh, gosh, it's such a hard question.
Well, I mean, Pilsen. I always find Rogers Park interesting, Hyde Park, Bronzeville's kind of interesting, if a bit downtrodden.
I was really intrigued by the southeast side, actually, when I was writing the book.
Oh, wow, good for you.
Because
nobody goes there.
Yeah, it's just...
Like Hegwisch and
exactly.
South Chicago.
And maybe it's the Cleveland in me, it feels a little like home, but...
well, it's undeniably gritty, but it's also historically significant, and it's... you're right, that's a fascinating... How would you get to these places? Would you drive, or would you take public transportation, or would you run?
I do have a car, same one I've had since
high school. Wow.
Yes.
The one you drove to Chicago?
It is, and public transportation, of course, yes. So... but yeah, the southeast side really intrigued me because I hadn't spent a lot of time down there, and just digging up some gems and learning about that area was really fascinating to me.
Well, it is a fascinating book, which we're going to explore at some length in the next half hour. Jessica Millenaric? Is that close?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Millenaric is here with her. Where's your fiance? Is he over there?
He's probably
getting a drink somewhere. when are you getting married?
We're getting married this June at Garfield Park Conservatory.
That's a nice that's
park district.
That's also a beautiful, beautiful place. You dedicate this book to Joe, Chris, Christina, and Steve Millenaric, who taught me that every place holds adventure worth exploring. That must be your parents and brother and sister.
That is, yes.
And then you do have quotes. I don't remember how I got in here, but you have two quotes in the beginning of the book. One from me, which is true, actually. I did say this. There's not a day that passes that I do not find my head filled with images from Chicago's history. And then, I've never been on an inside or outside book jacket along with Sun Ra, who said, and then when I went to Chicago, that's when I had these outer space experiences and went to the other planets. It's good that you didn't reverse those quotes.
You're in good company.
Though I probably have said something very much like that. Please stay tuned. You have just listened to a bit of the extended Rick Kogan After Hours show. Jessica will be here for the next 40 minutes to get into real specifics of the book, of which there are very, 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 very many, like Chicago's smallest cemetery. And believe me, I have covered this town my entire life, and there are things in here that I didn't know, which is a really good endorsement for this book, because I, you know, this is what I've spent my life writing about this stuff. Jessica, so stay tuned, ladies and gentlemen. We'll also have on today storyteller Nestor Gomez and Daryl Nitz talking about a special concert for Martin Luther King. Ben Anderson's producing. My new buddy Ernie Skatton is engineering, and we're ready to go.
And rejoice. The great day is here. We're fighting for freedom and victory is near.
Welcome hallelujah. Back. You all last Sunday. Hallelujah. The show was preempted by God knows what. The music you're hearing is from a fantastic CD called Oh Freedom, Songs of the Civil Rights Movement by Chris Villillo. It is not only a CD, it is a DVD, it is a sort of burgeoning stage play that Chris wants to do. And it's really a remarkable piece of work. I'm having in later in the show Daryl Nitz and Takora Rogers, who are going to talk about Let Freedom Ring Chicago, a musical celebration of Dr. Martin Luther King. His birthday, for those of you who don't know or may have forgotten, is Monday the 21st. Jennifer Millenaric, Jessica, why do I keep calling you Jennifer? That's so bizarre. Jessica's a nicer name. Millenaric is in the studio. We've been talking about her book, Secret Chicago, A Guide to the Weird, Wonderful, and Obscure, about her fiancé, engineer, and about Cap Streeter, her favorite all-time Chicagoan. The book contains something in the neighborhood of, I think I discounted them, something like 198.
90.
Only 190. There were 190 in the
just
next
90.
Book. 90, okay. Just 90.
What is maybe next this? Book.
Oh, I see. I'm looking at page numbers. Creative convenience.
Yes.
That's one that caught me a little off guard. It's at, I know where 1371 West Estes is. What is what is this place, Jessica?
It's a convenience store in Rogers Park. And, you know, it's just a corner store. You walk in. And it's called Kim's Corner Foods. You walk in and the owner, Thomas Kong, is just sitting at the counter like one does at a convenience store.
Right.
But when he's not tending to customers, he is sitting up there cutting out collages and making art. And he's using the leftover packaging materials from things that came into the store. So
that is a fascinating find. How did you find it, Jessica?
I think that I found that one from a neighborhood blogger, I believe, told me. And she hadn't been there, but she'd heard about it.
Interesting.
Because he hangs up his art all over the store. So it's on the walls, of course. It's on the coolers. It's on the shelves. It's on some of the merchandise. So it's this very whimsical and unexpected thing where you're like, can I buy this? Is this art?
Sure.
What's going on in here? And some local artists, he caught their eye. And there's a mural project up in Rogers Park on the CTA overpasses, and they created a mural inspired by his collages. So it's right in front of his store.
That's really a fascinating, fascinating find. How did this, we were talking a little about it when I was taking it up in the elevator, how did this book come to be?
Yes, well...
You had your blog.
I had my blog. I was, writing for other publications around town. And
but
I can,
mostly doing music, Chicago was you were doing music,
music, arts,
and,
culture kind of stuff, and always just getting around town and, whatever.
Did you aspire at any point? Did you ever think to yourself, gee, I'd like to write a book?
I think I've always wanted to, but the opportunity came to me sooner than I would have thought. And it was through another writer. Referred me to this publisher because she knew they were doing this project in other cities, and she knew about the writing I did, and connected me with them, and it was a great fit.
Did you have to give them a proposal, or did they just take look at samples of your own work and judge your ability from that?
I did some samples of a few of the places in the book.
Was it daunting for you, or did you jump at this? I mean, on some level. Never having written a book, and okay, you're doing a blog, and you're doing some writing about things which you really like. Mm-hmm. Did you all of a sudden say, oh my God, I've got to really do this?
Yes.
I've got to come up with almost 100 places that are secret by what would have to be your particular definition of the word secret.
I did have to work out my definition, and I decided on places that are either hidden or somewhere that you might know about, or you might walk past it or see it, but you don't know the story behind it. So, you like public art, as you mentioned.
Let's take a look at, talking about Southside, this place, the Soldier's Grave.
Oh, that might be my favorite in the whole book.
What is it?
So, this is the grave of Andreas von Zerngibel, and it is a grave located in a scrapyard.
Yeah.
And it is actually Chicago's smallest cemetery as well.
How did it come to be?
Andreas lived in Germany, and he was a soldier. He actually fought against Napoleon in the Battle of Waterloo, where he lost an arm. And he was also a fisherman. He came here many years later in the 1850s and started fishing along the Calumet River and settled down right there.
But you would think, and I know you have, that what a journey that is. What would compel you to say, to be in Germany with a number of children, too, and say, hey, I think I'm going to go to Chicago and fish the Calumet River? That's an astonishing story on the face of it.
It isn't. Chicago was much smaller at the time, and then, down by present day 93rd and Ewing, it's pretty far removed from
anything. Oh, sure. The farm life is nothing. Wilderness. Mm-hmm. I mean, almost wilderness. This is a guy who I had never heard of before, which is a good and rare thing. What did you think? You must have been, in many ways, Jessica, really moved when you went down there and discovered it. How did you come to this place?
I was. So he died about a year after he moved to Chicago, unfortunately, and his family moved to the north side. And years later, the land became industrialized, and they then fought over the rights to his grave because he was buried where he lived. And the court, I think it was like all the way up to the Illinois Supreme Court, ruled that the company owned the land, but that the family had rights to visit to access the grave, and the grave always had to remain there. So time goes by, and a scrapyard is there. And his tombstone got knocked down a couple times. They put up concrete barriers around it. But now the company that owns it closed that location. So I took all the photographs in the book. So I visited every place, and I was worried that I wouldn't be able to get in because it's now closed.
Yeah, sure.
And this company has locations all over the world. So I thought, I'll leave a voicemail and see what happens. And they called me back, and I set up an appointment, and I got to go. And the interesting thing is there are, you know, old metal compactors and things and signs of industry. But the land is starting to look maybe more like when Andreas lived there.
Yeah, it's returning to nature.
It's very quiet, and I don't know. It's every time I go over the Skyway, I can't help but think about him down there, because he's the only one.
Yeah, that is, I mean, nothing else. And I mean, that is one of the great and highlights of Jessica's Secret Chicago, A Guide to the Weird, Wonderful, and Obscure. We got to take a little commercial break, and then we will come back and be staying all the way till after 9:30. Waiting for Christopher Little to sing. That is from his CD. All the music you're hearing tonight is from O Freedom, Songs of the Civil Rights Movement, played in honor of Martin Luther King, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s day, a week from Monday. Before we get back to my buddy Jessica and her book, Secret Chicago, Guide to the Weird, Wonderful, and Obscure, and we're going to talk about Bughouse Square, which is a very, the Bughouse Square debates, because I want to tell you about next weekend is a reading marathon of that Herman Melville masterpiece, Moby Dick. There are dozens, I can't do it, but there are dozens of people who are going to read all weekend long that amazing, amazing book. Such people as Paul DeRica, Sarah Paretsky is going to be reading, Blair Thomas, a number of people, actors from the Shakespeare Project of Chicago, my colleague Mary Wisniewski. It's all day. Just go to newberry.org and you'll find Moby Dick Readathon. I wish I could be there. I was going to be, but then I can't be. You have in here, Jessica, in your book, Secret Chicago, A Guide to the Weird, Wonderful, and Obscure, you do have the Bughouse Square debates, don't you?
I do, and I only attended for the first time a couple of years ago, although I had been going to the book fair. And
the book fair is amazing.
It's you got to mark your calendar now.
Yeah, usually in June, roughly June, around
July,
June,
yeah.
Around June or July.
And I have been to the book fair. I've walked through the park and probably seen people gather there, but I don't think I knew what was actually going on that day.
Yeah.
And
it looks bizarre.
It.
I mean, it does look. I've hosted it for about the last, I don't know, since Studs Terkel died 10 years ago. Hosted it, and I guess to the passerby, it would look bizarre. It would look like some strange protest or something.
And there are people in
costume.
Old-timey costumes.
Yes,
and all kinds of costumes.
Yeah, it looks like some Halloween party in the middle of
it
the summer.
It does.
But it is a great event, and that, too, is included in your book. You also have another place that is a place of my childhood, the Couch Mausoleum, which sits in a very prominent spot between North Avenue and LaSalle Drive on Clark Street, sort of in front of what's called the Chicago History Museum, which I will always call the Chicago Historical Society. I will tell you that as a child coming over from Old Town, where I grew up, from the time we were about, I don't know, 8 until we were about 15, a bunch of us would go over there with hammers and chisels and anything, because we thought it was, there was treasure in there. We thought it was like King Tut's tomb. And I don't know if they fixed the outside of it, but there are dents, there are marks of our hammers and screwdrivers.
Goodness.
What is that thing? I mean, I know, but tell the listeners what that is.
Well, if anyone doesn't know,
because that's a good example. Sorry to interrupt you, Jessica, mm-hmm. but that's a good example of something that people would run by.
Yeah,
and people, millions of people, I would hazard to say, have seen it,
mm-hmm.
and a very small percentage of those have ever had the curiosity that you innately have to say, "What the hell is that, and why the hell is it here?" you answer those questions.
Well, for anyone who doesn't know, there are bodies in Lincoln Park.
Yes.
Still.
A lot of people don't know that.
It was formerly a cemetery, and they decided to move a lot of the bodies. They didn't get them all, so there's still several who are there. This was one grave that is visible, the only one that's visible that was not moved, and a hotel magnate named Ira Couch is buried there. But nobody knows who else.
Exactly. Whether any relatives.
It's a mausoleum.
It is a mausoleum.
Above ground, you can see it. It says Couch on it. But by the time his brother passed away, nobody knew who was in there. And some of the relatives are buried. I think is it Rose Hill Cemetery?
Yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah. And the cemetery records don't line up. And none of the family members know exactly who. There's a debate over how many people. It's like from 1 to 11 people could be in there. And the thing is rusted shut. So as you experienced, it's just a mystery.
Oh, yeah. And now it has a little nice little decorative fence around it. When I was a kid, it was overgrown with, you know, bushes and trees, so we could easily sneak in and try to break down. What we needed then was a genius engineer who might have explained to us how to actually get in the place. You also have, you go a little, not far afield, but you get into the Niles and do the Leaning Tower is a sort of notable, people know of the Leaning Tower, but for those of you out there who don't, what is it, Jessica?
Well, yes, there are 90 places in the book. 8 of them are in the suburbs surrounding Chicago, and the rest are in the city proper. So there's a Leaning Tower of Pisa in Niles.
What is it doing there?
It is disguising a water tower. So the gentleman who put it up, he needed a water tower for the pools for the nearby YMCA, and he decided to make it pretty.
Well, you take good pictures in here, too.
Thank you.
These color pictures are very nice. There's a section of color pictures in the middle of it. The rest is in black and white. Were there any... You must have had to, at some point, cull this list down from, you know, the 100 or something.
Yes.
What were the ones that were really... Were there a couple that were very, very difficult to wind up on the cutting room floor?
There were, and my hope is that I can keep covering all of these that didn't make it into the book that maybe there wasn't enough to say, and put them on my blog. So to keep the story going,
sure,
and I've got
a
little newsletter. So, I mean, like Calumet Fisheries is one that I love, but it gets a lot of press on like the Travel Channel and stuff.
No, that's true. So one of the things you're up against in any, do we break at 27 or go all the way to the half hour? We're breaking now because my great, great new producer, Ernie Skatton, is telling me to do so. We're going to break for commercials, but I'm going to keep Jessica after the news and talk a little bit more about her book. They're saying really interesting to do a book like this in the internet age where everybody is bowled over with information. Mm-hmm. That's let's talk about that after the news. Here, ladies and gentlemen, are some commercials. Civil Rights Movement, which is a CD, it's a live show, and it is one day to be a musical play. It's sort of in honor of Martin Luther King Day, which is 21st. I got about 5 minutes left with Jessica Milinarek and her lovely fiance here. They're getting married. They're going to get married at the Garfield Park Conservatory. They're going to honeymoon in Croatia. Maybe. That's not for sure yet.
Hoping.
And they'll do so on the royalties that are deserved. Nobody makes money in publishing anymore except Stephen King and Michelle Obama. But royalties are deserved for the book Secret Chicago,
Thank
A Guide
you.
To the Weird, Wonderful, and Obscure. It is Jessica's gathering of 40-some, I don't remember how many, Jessica?
90.
90-some, I'm so bad at math, 90-some secret places, some of which were secret even to me. And she, it's a marvelous way to sort of explore Chicago in the comfort of your own home, but I have the feeling it will compel people to get out of the comfort of their own home and go see some of these places. This is a difficult kind of book to do, Jessica, in the internet age where everything seems to be accessible, isn't it?
Yes, I would say I got most of my ideas through the old-fashioned way, through books.
Yeah.
And a lot of reading, and then just asking people, just
yeah.
anyone that I met, anywhere that I was, I would ask.
You find, being from Cleveland, you must have found that Chicagoans have a deep, deep abiding affection for, they're very chauvinistic about the place they live, and they are more than willing to share what they think are secrets. But it's all the whole definition of secret is so different than it was before Google. You know what I mean? I think you've done a remarkable job of finding things that are kind of secret.
Thank you. And I'm glad to hear that there are some surprises even for you. That
totally.
Means I've done my
Absolutely.
Job. Well, it's interesting, though. I was surprised in the process to encounter people. For example, I remember sitting at a bar in Bridgeport because we know that bartenders are the secret keepers of the neighborhood. So I talked
some.
To a lot
if
of
not
them.
If they call themselves mixologists, then walk out. But yeah, bartenders still have that.
But I was asking, you know, what are some interesting places in the
Good
neighborhood? And he said, oh, I'm just in my bubble here. There's nothing going on. There's nothing interesting. And it's funny because I know so many people who've never even made it down to Bridgeport, believe
yeah,
it or
I know.
Not. So
I know.
People were really excited to tell me about some places, but then also would get kind of jaded about their own area.
Sure.
And
sure. Well, some people want to be really protective now of their own areas,
That's true.
Too.
That's
There's
true.
No question about it. You have, again, I'm going to tell you, the title of the book is Secret Chicago, A Guide to the Weird, Wonderful, and Obscure. The author is Jessica Milinarik, Milinarik. You're having a trivia contest.
I am. It is going to be on Thursday, February 7th from 6 to 8 p.m. And it's at Fieldhouse Jones, which is on Chestnut around Orleans, so kind of River North area.
What is that place? I mean, I know that area pretty well.
Yeah.
What is Fieldhouse Jones?
It's very cool. It's a boutique hotel / hostel. There's a bar and a coffee shop there. So we're going to do Secret Chicago trivia. It's going to be a lot of fun. There'll be some food and drink specials. There'll be prizes.
It's and people can find that, I'm assuming, on your website, Urban Explorer.
Yes.
URBNExplorer.com. You think you have another book in you? You think there's another edition of this book?
I sure hope so. I've got so many more places that I didn't get to share, as I mentioned. And also when I'm travel now, that's like all I'm looking for in other cities. There are secrets everywhere. So
well, the other thing is that's a great way to travel, though.
It
really is. You know, because you know full well that so many people go to so many places and stay in the resort because it has five different restaurants
right.
that ooh will give you the flavor of Mexico. Nonsense. Nonsense. You're a girl after my own heart. Congratulations
you,
on the upcoming nuptials. Your future husband seems like a good, decent guy. And I said, as we said, if he lived with you while you wrote the book, you're never going to have
it's
any
so
problems.
True.
Writers are the most difficult people in the world. Jessica, it's a pleasure to meet you.
Thank you for having me, Rick.
Oh, my pleasure. It's a fun book.